This is Positive Parenting. Parenting expertise and advice from best-selling parenting author and national newspaper columnist, Mr. Dad, Armin Brott.
Hey there, welcome to Positive Parenting. I'm Mr. Dad, Armin Brott. Fear can give us tunnel vision. We fill the unknown with our worst imaginings and cling to the familiar. But when we face new challenges, it's most important for us to recognize the complexity of the situation, to accept uncertainty, and to avoid falling prey to our emotions. When Isaac Lidsky learned that he was going blind at age 13, eventually losing his sight entirely by the time he was 25, he thought blindness would mean an end to his early success and his hopes for the future. Paradoxically, losing his sight gave him the vision to take responsibility for his reality and thrive. He graduated from Harvard College at 19. He served as a Supreme Court law clerk, fathered four children, and turned a failing construction subcontractor business into a highly profitable business. In this part of today's show, we're going to be talking with Isaac Lidsky about how to confront our paralyzing fears and how we can challenge our own assumptions and faulty leaps of logic, silence our inner critic, harness our strength, and live with open hearts and minds. I'm Mr. Dad, Armin Brott. We're going to start our conversation with Isaac Lidsky about how to live a life with eyes completely wide open and a lot more when Positive Parenting continues right after this.
More with Mr. Dad, Armin Brott, after this from the MrDad.com radio network.
When I was little, I didn't talk for a long time. I liked things to always be the same. Anything new or different would scare and upset me. I was very sensitive to lights and sounds. It was almost like I had bigger eyes and ears than everyone else. So I built secret hiding places where nothing could get in. I didn't like looking people in the eye. It made me feel uncomfortable. I'd throw big tantrums over little things, like when my socks didn't match. Sometimes I'd do the same things over and over, until one day I found out I had autism. My family got me help. Slowly, I learned how to live with it better.
You can see signs of autism in children as young as 18 months. Early intervention can make a lifetime of difference. Learn the signs at autismspeaks.org/signs. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott, and my guest for this part of today's show is Isaac Lidsky, who's the author of Eyes Wide Open, Overcoming Obstacles and Recognizing Opportunities in a World That Can't See Clearly. Isaac, thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
So many of you may recognize the name Isaac Lidsky from his show Saved by the Bell years ago. But you probably don't know that he did a tremendous amount of other stuff. Was a clerk for Supreme Court justices and a businessman. Tell us how you made the transition from being a child actor to being somebody who really is a real grown-up.
Sure. Well, you know, part of my eyes wide open vision or philosophy really is being accountable to yourself for what it is that you want in your life and what it is that you're trying to achieve and what success looks like. So for me, the way that has manifested itself in my life is that I've kind of bounced around a lot and been blessed to do a lot of cool things along the way. So when I decided acting was not going to be a great career for me, I went off to college a little young, graduated at 19, and started an internet advertising technology business with my brother-in-law, and then went back to law school and had all sorts of great experiences in the public sector, and then decided that I didn't really want to be a big corporate lawyer for my career, and bought a struggling business with my college roommate and been running that for 5 years. So it's been, like I said, I've been blessed to do a lot of different things.
And the one thing you didn't mention, which is the subject in it to a great extent of the book that we're talking about, is that you lost your sight at age 25. Is that right?
Yeah. So I lost my sight progressively from age 12
right.
Yeah,
right.
Roughly age, 13 to 25. It's hard to say exactly when it started or when it ended. But that, as you say, really was the sort of insights I gained, the sort of realizations that came to me as I lost my sight, ultimately were, you know, a profound blessing in my life, and really helped me to live a life that's very rewarding and fulfilling. And you know, I credit losing my sight with gaining my eyes wide open vision.
So summarize that, eyes wide open vision.
Sure. So, you know, when I was diagnosed with my blinding disease, I knew that blindness was going to ruin my life. So, you know, psychologists call it awfulizing. I believed the awful reality of my fears. And later had the realization that that was really a reality of my own making, right? It was in my mind. And as I started to look at other aspects of life, you know, I saw that we really do shape our own realities in a lot of ways, but then perceive that reality as kind of immutable truth, right? So we make self-limiting assumptions and faulty leaps with logic, and we have misconceptions about strength and weakness and all sorts of things when at the end of the day, we are empowered to choose who we want to be and how we want to live our lives in every moment. And that is our ultimate power. It's also our ultimate responsibility. So realizing that, like I said, the sort of eyes wide open realization for me was a great blessing in my life.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that's so inspiring about your story and stories where people have overcome adversity is that you can achieve great success. I mean, you certainly did not let this rather debilitating condition, and it's something that you had absolutely no control over and couldn't stop, you didn't let that shape you. Well, you did in
right.
a way. I mean, it ended up shaping you, but it shaped you for the better. You didn't let it take you down the path that you had gone down, awfulizing.
Yeah, you know, so I like to say that, you know, people have, it's always the case that people have done more with less and been happier doing it, right? So I not okay. a lot, not a lot of value in the whole sort of feeling the victim and being miserable, although that's a choice that people can make. For me, the way that I lost my sight produced all sorts of very bizarre visual effects and gave me a peek behind the curtain, so to speak, into the sort of the wizardry of the mind. And I literally saw firsthand that sight, this immersive experience that just feels natural and passive and real, right? Just seeing is believing. We, you know, we even have a saying for it. I saw that really the truth is completely different. Sight is this unique personal virtual reality that you create in your head that it both shapes and is shaped by your memories, your opinions, your emotions, and you basically create this immersive reality for yourself, but then believe that it's sort of immutable truth. And obviously there was a lot of struggle in adapting to blindness, and it was a challenging time in my life. But you know, this realization was such a gift for me. And as I said earlier, I mean, it's true in so many aspects of life. And I literally saw it firsthand. And my hope is that I can explain it well enough to others so they can see it and find value in their lives.
So what do you tell a child, or what would a parent tell a child who is dealing with something like, we'll start with the extreme cases of something like yours, some condition that they have that is going to affect them negatively, at least perception-wise?
Yeah, so I'm really big on telling my children, you know, you get to choose what it is you want to do, what it is you want to accomplish, and who you want to be. And you know, you're empowered to make those choices for yourself, absent any external circumstances, right? There's no limitation out there in the world beyond you. The only limitation you may come across is in your own mind. So you know, I talk with my kids a lot about you know, being empowered and you know, sort of helping themselves to things and making good decisions. And
sure,
I think that's the message.
Well, but I think that's a little easier to do from the parents' perspective, because we can see things from a bit of a distance and explain that. But you know, kids, teenagers, for example, you know, when you started at age 13 losing your sight, and a kid who's got a limp or something that's more visible, a disability of some kind, kids are not as nice as parents are when dealing with differences. And so there's the additional thing. I mean, yes, you can be anything you want to be, and you choose the person that you're going to be, but how do you deal with the pressure from the outside or the comments from the outside that you're not the kind of person that you want to be and you never will be?
Yeah, no, that's an excellent question. I mean, we are going to confront others' assumptions about us, others' expectations of us, and social pressures can bend steel, right? So, really, the trick I think is being 1,000% committed, zealously committed to the idea that that sort of stimulus that comes in from the outside, and then what you actually decide to do with it is your choice. And I like to tell my kids, for example, if they're frustrated or getting angry or doing something, we try to talk through the root cause of why, but also like to tell them, it's your choice to be angry. You can make a choice, another choice. Sometimes it's very hard and it's natural to be angry, but to the extent that you want to sort of persist in this sort of frustrated sort of mood of anger and resentment, that's a choice that you're making. And I think, I would hope you would make another choice.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great lesson. It's just, I'm kind of thinking
about
it.
So the same is true of, one of my sons, said, oh, so-and-so in class today, said I'm stupid, or, so-and-so said, some awful thing about me, which happens with kids, right? And then, the question is, well, how did that make you feel? Did you like it? How did it make you feel? Well, what do you think? Are you going to choose to listen to that? Are you going to choose to let him or her change your opinion of yourself? And, you just kind of talk through it. I think we underestimate, I think we grossly underestimate the reasoning powers of our children.
No, I think you're right. I think we definitely do underestimate it. And I think they underestimate it as well, too, sometimes.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
I'm talking with Isaac Lidsky, who's the author of Eyes Wide Open, Overcoming Obstacles and Recognizing Opportunities in a World That Can't See Clearly. Isaac's also an entrepreneur, a former child actor, a clerk to Supreme Court justices, and has done all sorts of other wonderful and amazing things. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to keep talking to Isaac about blindness, about disability, about moving forward, about fatherhood, and even about luck. I'm Armin Brandt, and you're listening to Positive Parenting.
Dear John, I was hoping it wouldn't come to this, but you've left me no choice. I'm leaving. Uncontrolled high blood pressure is really serious, and lately you seem to really not care. I've been there for you since day one, and I know you think I'm going to keep ticking. But no, my friend, I can quit whenever I want. Why can't we get back to the good times, when we were more active and ate more healthy foods, and you checked on me every once in a while? Is that too much to ask? I don't want to leave, but unless you stop ignoring me, what else am I supposed to do? Remember, when I quit, you quit. Sincerely, your heart.
Listen to your heart. Don't let it quit on you. Doing the minimum to control your high blood pressure isn't doing enough. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get your blood pressure to a healthy range before it's too late. Find out how at heart.org/bloodpressure. Check, change, control. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
You're not wired to have a response to this sound. You're neutral to it. You hear it every time you finish a meal and never feel anything. But if we were able to associate this sound with a new stimulus, save the food, we've achieved pulling a natural response from you. Save the food. Why are we doing this, you may ask? Save the food. Because this ad is trying to change your after-meal behavior through brainwashing. Because food waste costs the average family $1,500 a year. Save the food. Cha-ching. And $1,500 extra is like getting a pay raise. Save the food. Cha-ching.
You're promoted.
Which could pay for your child's braces. Save the food. Cha-ching.
You're promoted.
Check out my braces.
So when you hear this sound, rethink your behavior. Cook it, store it, share it. Just don't waste it. For tips and recipes, visit savethefood.com. Brought to you by NRDC and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. If you're just joining us, I'm Armin Brant, and talking with Isaac Lidsky, who's the author of Eyes Wide Open, Overcoming Obstacles and Recognizing Opportunities in a World That Can't See Clearly. What do you mean by the world not seeing clearly?
So I'm sorry I have to cut you off, but Armin, I am passionate about this. We perceive as immutable truth, we perceive as circumstances beyond our control, machinations of our own minds. It's pervasive in our lives, and it's a real shame, but there is an opportunity to see things differently, to see yourself as the creator of your reality, empowered to choose how you want to live and who you want to be in every moment. So that's what I get at in terms of not seeing things clearly.
Okay, so the world is not seeing you for what you see yourself or what you see as
the world,
your potential.
Yeah, a lot of folks do. A lot of folks fail to see the ultimate power they have to really control their realities and their destinies.
How were your parents when you were dealing with your issues of going blind?
That's a great question. So, you know, my parents, very soon after the diagnosis, committed themselves to find a cure, a treatment for my blinding disease. And they worked tirelessly with a lot of friends and family and a widening sort of circle of support to raise research funding. And that was phenomenal. I was part of those efforts early on and ultimately founded a nonprofit to coordinate those efforts across the country. And it was a great positive in a lot of ways. But it was also, for me, kind of a bit of a denial, frankly. It was an opportunity for me to sort of kick the can down the road in terms of how am I going to deal with, on a daily basis, the reality of my losing my sight, you know, and instead to focus on this Hollywood, you know, narrative of I will be cured. And, you know, so I was kind of lost a little bit for a good, you know, 3-4 years there before I kind of changed my perspective.
And when you change your perspective, did that, you think, come from inside, or were your parents driving that? Because I think, it's a very sophisticated sort of philosophy to have for a child. And obviously it developed for you over time, but this, you can be anything you want to be, and you're responsible for the kind of person that you become, it's easy to say, it's harder to implement. And I'm wondering if yours came from within entirely, or whether there were outside influences.
So it's absolutely easy to say and hard to do. And the one thing, you know, that I'll stress is, you know, living Eyes Wide Open and, you know, leading Eyes Wide Open is for me, it's a discipline that takes, you know, practice and effort. And some days I'm better at it than others. It's more of an aspiration for me. This is not a, you know, flip a switch kind of experience, at least not in my life. But you know, having just said not a flip the switch, I did have a moment that was pretty significant in my journey, when I met with a low vision rehabilitation specialist for the first time. And I had been conceiving of blindness as this doom and gloom, this sort of amorphous boogeyman that was going to ruin my life. You know, again, the sort of awfulizing of my fears. And, you know, I walked into her office. Her name was Chris, and she just wanted to get right down to, well, do you use a cane? Do you hurt your, you know, you don't use a cane, you hurt yourself? Well, you know, maybe if you use a cane, you wouldn't hurt yourself. And here's 10 million, you know, practical, discrete things that you can do today to make your life a little easier and a little better. And that was just an incredible experience for me. It was kind of an aha moment where I realized that everything I thought I knew about blindness was a lie, that I really knew nothing about it at all, and that I hadn't done anything to learn about it. And I decided to you know, take a different path.
And so did you spend a lot of time learning about it? I mean, you said you started a foundation, so obviously you must have something, some deep base of knowledge. But how important was that, learning about it, to being able to move on?
For me, it was very important, learning both, you know, about the nature of my disease and the nature of sight and the mind, but also just, you know, the practicalities, right? St- staying abreast of the myriad tools and technologies and systems that the blind and visually impaired can use to get done what they want to get done. And I mean, for me, it's about choice, right?
Yeah.
I learned early on about a gentleman named Eric Weinmeier, who's blind, and he has climbed the highest peak on every continent, including, of course, Everest. It was challenging to continue to succeed as a student and as a lawyer and, reading textbooks and whatnot as I lost my sight. But this guy climbed Everest. So
there's practical
solutions for practical problems.
Yeah. So is the condition that you had...
Yeah, retinitis pigmentosa.
Retinitis pigmentosa. Is that a hereditary thing? I mean, do you worry about that as a dad? That your kids are going to have to deal with this?
They discovered the gene that leads to the pathology in my family 2 or 3 years ago, and while my children carry it because it's a recessive condition, they don't have it. My wife is not a carrier of the gene, so my children do not have it. That is not something that we necessarily knew when we decided to have children.
So how has that changed things? I mean, I've noticed as a dad myself that there's nothing that helps you clarify what you think you know than trying to explain it to a child. And as the dad of four children, you certainly had ample opportunity to try to explain things to your kids. Has that helped you hone your philosophy about eyes wide open?
Absolutely. There's no question about it. And I am a firm believer in the idea. It's not my idea, but certainly it's my experience that we can tell our children all we want to tell them, but they learn from watching what we do. And I want desperately, and above all else, to be a good father to my children. And I remember kind of having the realization of that I need to then live the example of what the life is kind of that I want for them. And that was a big part of me finally taking the time and undergoing the effort to write the book and to really kind of crystallize my thinking.
Was it hard for you to refrain from using your condition as a crutch from time to time? To say, I just don't feel like doing this, so I'm going to tell people that I just can't do it because I can't see.
That's a great question. So there's a thin, elusive line between acceptance and surrender. And when we're not completely honest with ourselves about the basis for our decisions and our thoughts, we risk kind of crossing that line. So I pretty early on realized that I would encounter all sorts of situations where, like as you put it, I could use my blindness as a crutch or get out of jail free card, or and it was even more dangerous. It was easy to kind of not necessarily worry myself too much about the details. Is this really because I'm blind? Is it not? How hard? It's easy to just kind of brush all that under the rug. And I made a decision as part of this whole eyes wide open, being accountable to yourself for the choices you're making. I made the decision that I would at least always be brutally honest with myself about the weather and the why and mm-hmm. everything. So there are times where I will get out of something because people maybe think the blindness is more of a challenge than it would be or not or otherwise. And that's okay. I'm not judgmental about that. And I think you got to take the good with the bad.
Sure.
But it's critical to be honest with yourself and just kind of check in and understand that that's what you're doing. Otherwise you start to believe that you're not capable, right?
Yeah.
And that's surrender.
And we only have just a couple seconds left, but I want you to talk about luck. It's such, people talk about good luck and bad luck. And do you consider your life path having anything to do with luck?
So there's a whole chapter in the book. I think there's no question that luck is a major force in life, but I think it's one that we completely misperceive. For folks who are interested, I encourage you to check it out. But you said we only had a couple seconds, so I won't go too far into it. But I think we tend to underestimate our influence in shaping our own luck and think about it too simplistically.
Isaac Lidsky is the author of Eyes Wide Open, Overcoming Obstacles and Recognizing Opportunities in a World That Can't See Clearly. Isaac, thanks very much for joining us. Great to talk to you.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
WWE superstar Alberto Del Rio, take one.
Behold the angry giant.
Try it again, Alberto.
Behold the angry giant.
Perfect. Good luck tonight.
Behold the angry giant.
Yay! Read me another one, Dad.
This is WWE superstar Alberto Del Rio. It only takes a moment to make a moment. Take time to be a dad today.
Visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Chris, you're not acting like a grown-up in our relationship.
M2!
There's your comic book collection, the race car bed.
I'm young at heart, but I put money into my 401k every paycheck. I'm taking control over my financial life, and that feels pretty grown-up to me.
Put away a few bucks, feel like a million bucks. For free ideas and easy ways to save, go to feedthepig.org. That's
feedthepig.org.
Are those footy pajamas?
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Mr. Dad, Armin Brott, and it's time for an Ask Mr. Dad question. Dear Mr. Dad, my wife and I are getting divorced, and while things are generally amicable, we're having some major disagreements about whether it's okay for our two young children, ages 3 and 1, to sleep over at my house. We both want what's best for the kids, but my wife says that because the kids are so young, they shouldn't be separated from their mother, and that doing so would interfere with the mother-child relationship. I say that not letting them spend as much time with me as they do with their mother would interfere with the father-child relationship, which would be just as bad and could end up causing more problems than it solves. Who's right? Well, assuming that there's no history of violence or abuse in your family, especially involving you, and if there were, you probably wouldn't be writing anyway, you're right. Over the past few decades, dozens of researchers have tried to answer the same general question that you and your wife are asking. What type of parenting plan is best for children whose parents are separated? When you factor out the politically motivated research, that's the kind where the people who are conducting the study are looking for data to support their personal beliefs, the consensus is very clear. Overall, the children in shared parenting families have better outcomes on measures of emotional, behavior, and psychological well-being, as well as better health and better relationships with their fathers and their mothers. That's according to Linda Nielsen, who's a researcher at Wake Forest University in North Carolina. Many researchers have also tried to answer the very specific question you and your wife are struggling with. Is it okay for very young children to spend overnights at their father's house? And again, the consensus is very clear. There is no evidence to support postponing the introduction of regular and frequent involvement, including overnights, of both parents with their babies and toddlers, says Richard Warshak, who's a researcher at the University of Texas Southwestern Medical Center. Warshak's recent article, which was called Social Science and Parenting Plans for Young Children, a Consensus Report, was endorsed by more than 100 researchers and practitioners. As I've mentioned before in this column, new mothers and fathers have almost identical nurturing instincts, responding to and caring for their infants in the same ways. But over time, parenting skills are learned on the job. I've also talked a lot about fathers' very important role in their children's development, a role that starts even before the child's birth and that is no less important than the mother's. It follows, then, that, as you say, father-child relationships are just as important as mother-child relationships. And the best way to support those relationships is to make sure a child spends as close to equal time with each parent as possible. As Warshak puts it, such arrangements allow each parent to learn about the child's individual needs and to hone parenting skills most appropriate for each developmental period. So how much time should each of you spend with your children? In my view, 50-50 is, of course, ideal, but that may not be possible. The key is going to be for the two of you to work together to come up with a flexible plan that works for both of you and that gives your children plenty of time with each of you. Given that you said the magic words, "We both want what's best for our kids," I have no doubt that you'll succeed.
Thanks for listening to Positive Parenting. You can get more information on today's show and what we're working on in the weeks ahead at MrDad.com. While you're there, visit the MrDad.com gift shop with everything you need to help you become the dad or mom you want to be. Positive Parenting is a production of the MrDad.com radio network. Now, go be a great parent.